Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to MightRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.MightRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Holly Kelly, author of Sunrises and Sunsets, Final Affairs, Forged with Flair, Finesse, and Functuality. Holly is a gerontologist, journalist, and author, and has awakened the nation on final affairs planning with her groundbreaking and captivating new book. As a gerontologist and founder of the Ladder Life Planning Institute, the ultimate guidance for life's final destiny, she set out to close the gap on advanced care planning and open the dialogue on death discussion in a written work that would appeal to adults of all ages. But she aimed to do more, and that was to encourage the transcendence toward personal peace and stir new enthusiasm for the present. Sunrises and Sunsets, Kelly tackles the unapproachable topic of final affairs planning with an interactive and entertaining soulful vengeance. Part guidebook and part workbook, this hybridized book is one unique and beautiful inspiring call to action. From the full-color photographs to the thought-provoking, optimistic, and witty quotes and the genuinely impassioned poetry and heart-rending personal stories, she fashioned final affairs planning that appeals to everyone. From creating a bucket list, completing advanced directives, planning your own funeral and writing your obituary, completing your family tree and writing heartfelt letters to loved ones, and so much more. Sunrises and Sunsets is both a unique and invaluable book aimed at helping readers take stock in every detail surrounding their own fundamental approach. We are pleased to welcome gerontologist and journalist and also credentialed professional gerontologist and author of Sunrises and Sunsets, which some simply refer to as Death Strangler, Holly Kelly. And by the way, folks, you can find out more about her book by visiting her website, which is www.sunrisesandsunsetsbook.com. And I do have a direct link to that website in the show page description. So with that, let me go ahead and welcome Holly to the show. Good day, Holly.
Oh, thank you so much, Robert. It's a pleasure to be your guest today.
Well, thank you. And this is an auspicious day, is it not, for your book?
Today is a big day because while I feel like it's been out for quite some time because I've been working diligently, today is actually the official copyright of Sunrises and Sunsets book. So milestone today.
That's great. Well, I'm so pleased to have you here today. And when I did the post this morning regarding today's topic, you know, I indicated that this is one of those topics that's inevitable for everyone. And also it's one that is quite often just avoided and not really talked about.
Very true. It's a subject that most people don't want to think about. And it is a topic that is avoided, you know, culturally and even worldwide, which is, I think, why this book was even so more important to me.
Yeah, well, let's go ahead and start. First of all, tell us about the book and how is it that you came up with the title, Final Affairs, Forged with Flair, Finesse, and Functuality. Fun is capitalized, by the way, folks.
Capital F-U-N. Well, the book started out, as a writer, I typically need a starting point, and I have to write with a title. For some writers, the title comes last, but I needed to start with a title. And so Sunrises and Sunsets was generated because I really kind of think of the imagery of a sunrise being connected to our births and the day in between, the time in between the sunrise and the sunset as being our life lived, and the sunset being, you know, our final hours in our mortal sense. And so sunrises and sunsets to me was more imagery, and I actually had planned on getting rid of it, but people love the title. And I said, you know, it's just not enough. And I love alliteration, and I knew that nobody was going to buy this book if it didn't, you know, resonate with them. So I decided to add the final affairs forged with flair, finesse, and functionality. So that's the story on the title.
Well, it's a little bit of a tongue twister, but I think it accurately reflects your final product, you know, because...
Yes, it's a broadcasting challenge.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Yeah, you know, again, the flair and finesse is in there, and we'll talk about that a little bit later in the ways that you incorporated that into the book, and certainly, you know, making it a fun and functional, practical book as well. So those mission was accomplished with that. So, and speaking of mission. What is your mission with this particular book?
Actually, my mission was threefold. I really wanted people to become more comfortable with accepting their own departure and being comfortable having the death conversation both with themselves personally as well as their family, and make the subject not so personally and culturally taboo. My second goal in the book was to really positively encourage people to complete their advanced care planning initiatives. And in my studies, I became so aware of the staggering statistics regarding the amount of people that fail to complete advanced directives. It just shocked me. And nationwide and worldwide, while statistics vary, it really seems to run around only a third of adults in America and worldwide that complete these important forms. So it was important to me to try to bridge that gap somehow, some way. And so that was the beginning of that. But then I realized that's such a little part of what is vastly important for each person to do for themselves. And I thought about all of the things that should be conveyed. And so as a gerontologist, I decided to create and tackle what I felt was comprehensive advanced care planning. And so that was my second goal. And the third goal was to truly inspire enriching living moving forward after this work had been done. I wanted readers to really just have a new zest for life and to be inspired to live their bucket list.
And I was going to say that, you know, the one thing that impressed me about the book is that there was an equal balance, really, for the individual who was planning their final, you know, day, you know, the way that the final plan, but also really gave focus to the people also who were going to be surviving. So, I mean, it kind of, you know, gave that mutual attention to both aspects of someone passing.
Yes, it's a book that is a gift to yourself, in that it is life-elevating, soul-soothing, and creates a sense of peace and tranquility while allowing you to handle your unfinished business. But it's a gift to your survivors, and it's really a written version of your legacy that continues to give to those you love well after your passing. So it is a beautiful gift to pass on and keep in families.
Yeah, very much so. Now, I mentioned in the introduction that you have been referred to as the Death Wrangler. Boy, tell us a little bit about that. How did you get that, and exactly what does that mean to you?
Oh, that's something that kind of came to be accidentally, as many nicknames do, and it was one of those cognomens that just simply stuck. I've been a lifelong horse enthusiast. I'm captivated by the Old West and Native American cultures, and so those themes seem to have a way of showing up in my life. I don't intentionally do it, but it's through my decor, my perspectives and outlooks, and so apparently it is in my writing too. In my first interview, the writer asked me, she said, what exactly do you want to do with death? What did you want to do with death? And so I told her, I paused for a moment and I thought about it and I said, well, I think I wanted to wrangle it. I guess I wanted to be a death wrangler of sorts. And so the first story ever printed was titled in huge letters, Death Wrangler. and so that's what kind of ended up being the nickname. But, you know, the truth is I recognize we can't technically wrangle death. I recognize that our mortal right. lives do have an end. And but it was kind of in a philosophically implied metaphoric application. The book actually does help you wrangle your personal fears, your attitudes, your preconceived perceptions on death. So, you know, I do feel that there is a kind of a figurative or intellectual, spiritual, and emotional wrangling which occurs with readers as they work their way through the book. And I do love that.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, as one goes through the workbook, you know, and answers the questions, and by the way, it's beautifully done, you know, and it's in nice, large type, you know, so for some people who may, maybe elderly, and, you know.
14-point font, and you don't need the readers.
Okay. Well, you know, the thing is that it makes it very easy to read, and is the exercises and, you know, the questionnaires and those kind of things are very easy to, and they, as I was going through and looking at them and answering some of the questions, most of the things I probably had given thought to, but there certainly were items there that I was like, well, no, let me think about this. You know, exactly how do I feel about death? You know, what are some of my beliefs? Who do I want to leave certain things to? Who do I want to know, you know, my story that maybe no one knows, you know, and what parts of my story do I want to, you know, share with the world or have the world know before, you know, while I'm gone, you know, that kind of thing. So it's very clarifying, which is, I think, a very good thing.
Oh, that's neat. I'm so excited that you took the time and worked through it. It is self-revealing, for sure.
Yeah, very much so. So now, you are a gerontologist, so would you mind sharing with the listeners exactly, you know, what that is and, you know, what it was in your studies that led you to writing the book?
Well, so many people don't understand what a gerontologist is because it is such a unique field. But a gerontologist is someone that engages in the study of aging and problems of the aged. They study from a social, psychological, cognitive, and biological perspective. And it's a very diverse, multidisciplinary field. And so the folks working in this arena are trained in an array of areas from psychology, physiology, social science, public health, policy, a ton of subfields such as what I do, which is writing and consulting. So that's what a gerontologist is. What led me to write the book was during my gerontological studies, it was required to do a capstone, and I thought, well, I've got to do something that engages me, that interests me, and I became extremely fascinated with the low statistics of people that handled advanced directives. So I thought, that's kind of a spark. I want to go with that. And I knew that if I could maybe use my writing skills to forge some form of work, that I could see this project through. And the book was actually kind of accidental. I wrote the book in a 10-week period of time under, you know, huge, strict timelines to get it done. And I certainly was hoping for a good grade at the end. It culminated my studies.
Mm-hmm.
And when I turned it in, the director of the gerontology department at the university sent me an email, and she said, "Dear Holly, I don't think you have any idea what you have done. If you ever do anything in your life, you must publish this book." And so I was like, okay, I hope that means I got an A. I used to like it, and that made me very happy. But I was extremely comfortable in life's womb of contentment and complacency. I was happy where I was at, and so I took the compliment. It didn't instill action in me. And then, of course, the reporter called me about a month later, and I was confused how she even got the book, because I'd only turned it into one person, and she explained to me that everybody's read the book. And I was like, oh, my goodness. And so she was hoping I would publish it because she said everybody was waiting on it, and I still didn't do anything. But it was about a month later that I received an email from a total stranger who told me that they had lost their father at the age of 94 recently, and this book helped them to the road of recovery, and they had read every page and what this book meant to them and how it would have been loved by their father. And it was in that moment that was kind of an epiphany for me, and I kind of looked up and said, okay, I've got the memo. I realize what you want me to do.
Yeah. Well, you know, it is that, that kind of accolade from a stranger, you know, because up to that point, you know, quite often, you know, when you have feedback from people that you know, it doesn't seem to carry the same kind of motivation or inspiration that it would coming from a stranger, you know, because
recognize that you can change people and help people and promote wellness. And I just thought, I can't let that collect dust. If this can help somebody like that, it needs to be out there. If it can change lives to that degree, I must act.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the format of your book is different in the sense that it's not strictly text. In your book, you know, first of all, it's in color, and that it includes photographs, poetry. So why is it that you chose, I mean, because, you know, quotes and poetry, you know, quite often you just don't, I don't know, when I think of a workbook, you know, end of death kind of workbook, you know, I wouldn't have gone there myself.
Right.
So how is it that you decide to take that format?
The book is, you know, it is being called a hybridized book, and the book is an experience. The book is, while my name is on the cover and I'm the initial author of the book, this book is a written work that you engage with, that each reader takes and becomes part of the process. And when they are done working the book, they're actually the final author of this book. The quotes and the poetry and the photographs are there kind of as a mental break, as part of the journey to make it enjoyable, to make it something that people can really find resonating. And so it's really broken up into a lot of different things in one book, so that, you know, you think about the subject matter. Here I am writing a book about death, and I'm thinking, nobody's going to buy a book about death. Nobody. Who wants to buy this kind of book? I'll have one person purchase this book. It will be my mother as an in-kind gift. So I knew I really needed to get creative with this book and make it special and unique. And I wanted people to be thinking, oh, my goodness, what's on the next page? And that's hopefully, the feedback so far is that people are doing that. People are enjoying this kind of collage of what is in between this 225-page book.
Yeah, you know, that was the one thing when I was going through it. It's the kind of book that I thought that after someone passes, that it would be like a family heirloom. I mean, sometimes it's difficult for people to put down into words their thoughts and feelings and experiences, format it, and, you know, even to know what it is to write about, you know. So having the format there, where the basically I can just fill in the lines, you know, and also the poetry and even the photographs are wonderful ways for the people going through the book to personalize it and add their own poetry, prose, their own photographs, other things to really make it their own personal story. And it's a great thing. You know, I know that I have a very good friend who deals with, you know, people writing their memoirs, but that's such an intense process, you know, for people. And quite often people get bogged down, whereas with your book, it's very simple. I mean, it's just very, very easy for people to go through and do. So I think that it's a wonderful way for people, you know, to be able to tell their story. And if you have listeners out there, if you have, you know, a grandparent who maybe is not able to do the writing, you know, I mean, it's a wonderful way for you as a son, daughter, grandchild, to be able to go to them and just kind of go through that and say, I want to know about you, and I want my children and my children's children to know about you. So let's go ahead and do this.
Yes, and it is a great gift. And by the way, for your listeners, it's on sale today to commemorate the official debut for an unbelievable price. So anybody that wants the book, I would actually send them. They can get it cheaper on Amazon than I can get the book and send it to them. So certainly anybody that has family, they could. Today's the day to get it.
Well, great. That's excellent. Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, I want to talk a little bit about. Now, the book is broken down into several sections. So I'd like to talk about those sections and maybe, you know, one or the two of the topics within each section, you know, so that the listeners really kind of get a good idea of, you know, some of the content of the book. So you basically start with section one called The Sun Rises and the Sun Sets. And in that you have several topics like about your book, Life Equals Death, your thoughts on living, and then your thoughts on death, you know. And those are the things that I think that are wonderful sections for people to get clarity about. But you also had a section called Your Bucket List. So would you mind kind of talking about a little bit about, you know, why you included that? And then I have a little story I wanted to share with you.
Oh, sure, yes. And a keen observation of all the interviews I've done, you're the first person that actually has realized that these sections actually have a reasoning to them and have brought into the sections. So that says a lot about your attention to detail. So section one, The Sun Rises and the Sun Sets, is kind of an intro. You're wading into the kiddie pool, and you're getting a feel for this, and in the process you're evaluating your thoughts, and it is initially just kind of me taking your hand, a literary hand-holding, and we're walking together through this. And it's slow. It evolves. By the time we're done with section one, it's been a call to action. And so that's what section one is. And it certainly you begin writing in the book in section one, and you kind of explore and delve into your personal thoughts, things you may have never even thought of before. And it's easy. The bucket list, love the bucket list, because I think that sometimes as we grow older, we forget how important it is for us to plan amazing things moving forward. We get caught in the grind and the day-to-day living, and we get bogged down. And I think of how we were when we were children, and we always had that next big thing. Not only was every day an adventure, but we had those milestones that we looked so forward to, and we couldn't wait, and the anticipation was insanely exciting. And so that's what your bucket list is to tap your inner child, bring that person back out, and put things, set the blueprint for exciting adventures moving forward, big and small. It could be sitting on the front porch for 20 minutes and seeing how many different species of birds you identify, all the way to something expensive. But it just is something that you find that is important to you that you're not taking the time for. So I'd love to hear your story. Was your story related to Populous?
Yeah, exactly, yes. Now, I'm doing a book right now, and it's involving caregivers, and it's the premise is going to be stories from caregivers, and we're going to be focusing on the individual for whom they gave care for. So it's kind of like a tribute to those individuals who received the care. And but it's also the story from the caregiver's point of, you know, their feelings of being a caregiver, the things that were maybe challenging, you know, and then the reward that they experienced as a result of being a caregiver. And
incredible.
One of the stories that, it's going to be really good. I have some really good stories so far. Hopefully I'll get that done this year. But there's one story, and it's actually from my sister. Now, my sister was a caregiver for my mother in her final days. And one of the things that my sister listed as, like, if she would do things a little bit differently, what she might do, one of those was a bucket list. And it was not so much the idea of grandiose types of activities, travel, and that kind of thing, because at that particular point, you know, my mother was stage 4 cancer. She was very, very, you know, close to death. But what my sister found was that if she thought that if she had done a bucket list of sorts to deal with some of the things, like, you know, one of the items on your list was, is there someone from your past you need or wish to connect with? You know, there was one particular example where my sister thought, you know, if that had been on my mother's list, and as well as a few other things, that going through the process of checking off those items would have given her a little more of a sense of taking care of business, you know, kind of not leaving unfinished business, which, you know, seemed to be the case when she passed. So, you know, to me, it was just really interesting. When I saw that section, I thought, you know, there's the bucket list of grand things, but then there's also the bucket list of, you know, those little small things and not to leave unfinished business, you know, because, you know, that unfinished business, you know, if you believe in the afterlife, carries on, you know, into that spirit realm. And then it also affects those who leave, you know, who are the object of that unfinished business. So, you know, it's just one of those things where it kind of brings completion, you know. So anyway, that was one of those stories that I had for a caregiver, and I just thought that, you know, I was really happy to see your bucket list as part of your book for that particular section.
Oh, well, thank you, and I think that you've raised an important point, and the bucket list can still be for any life stage. One of the most beautiful stories I ever read was a paramedic, ambulance driver, if you will, who was charged with taking an elderly lady to hospice, and all she wanted to do was see a sunrise, and she talked about that in this. Pulled the ambulance over on the side of the road, got out a chair, and they sat there together and watched the sunset. I think that is the most beautiful thing in the world. And so costs nothing but humanity and decency and compassion for another human being. And that's exactly what that lady needed to do what she was doing next. And so bucket list can be anything, and they don't have to be expensive. They just have to be meaningful.
Exactly. Wow. Well, we're about halfway through the show right now, Holly, so I want to take just a quick break, about 90 seconds here, and I do want to invite anyone listening that if you'd like to call in and ask Holly any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. Or for those of you listening in the chat room, if you have any questions that you would like for me to pose to Holly, free to type them in. And then, Holly, when we come back, let's go ahead and I want to talk about the other two sections of your book, okay?
Very good. Thank you.
Okay. Great. Okay, everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very brief break.
This is Robert Sharp from Bringing Inspiration to Earth. There are several ways for a win-win situation where you can support our work and you receive a quality product. You can purchase the book or ebook of Joy Potential or It's No Secret Spirituality Bites. Each book has helped readers shift their perspective away from negativity towards a happier, less stressful life. Or you can shop at our wellness store, where we offer essential oils, personal care, and wellness products. I am a very frugal shopper, and these are high-quality items I use that really contribute to my well-being. Or you can purchase our amazing nature photo greeting cards. These are great all-occasion, unique 5x7 folding cards. They're my most popular nature photos, and everyone who has received one raves about the scene. All options are available at our website, www.biteradio.me, and I am very appreciative of your support of our efforts and the work of our special radio guests.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us again today. My very special guest is Holly Kelly, and we are talking about her new book called Sunrises and Sunsets, Final Affairs Forged with Flair, Finesse, and Functuality, Functuality with capital F-U-N. And again, you can find out more about Holly's book by visiting her website, which is sunsetandsunrisesbook.com. And I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. Okay, Holly, we're back.
Great. Thank you.
Great. And I do want to mention that you are on Facebook too, right? You've got a Facebook page, so people can join you there as well, right?
Sunrises and Sunsets Book on Facebook.
Yep. I've already liked it, so I'm looking forward to keeping in touch with you and following your journey on there as well. So, let's go ahead and now section two of the book is called Leave It to You. And, I mean, that's got the advanced directives, final wishes, your obituary. Boy, I mean, that seems to be the kind of how to set your exit up.
Yes, and this is, it's Leave It to You because it should be left to you. And you should be making these decisions. So, we had the call to action in section one, and section two is now we're going to get busy and figure out all of these decisions that we need to make and the things that we've explored and talked about. Now we're going to take initiative on them, and so you do cover and complete your advanced directives, last will and testament, final wishes. There's a template there that makes writing your obituary so easy, and everyone should write their own obituary. It shouldn't be left to survivors, because they're usually doing it in the worst frame of mind, the worst time.
Yeah.
It's not a task that anybody wants to do when they're under incredible grief and bereavement. And so having it done in advance is truly a gift and much appreciated to the folks that are suffering when someone passes. It covers funeral homes and finances, and then it gets to your funeral and ceremony, which is probably one of my favorite sections because you kind of orchestrate all things in that section that you want. And you don't have to come up with it on your own. It's all there. And there's just a lot of ideas in the template, and you just fill in the blanks. And then it comes with the nitty-gritty deets, which is just other details.
Yeah, I know someone who has, she has her, all her details ready. She's an 82-year-old woman I know, very dear to me. But I mean, she's got everything laid out. I mean, everything, you know. And it's, you know, when she started talking to me about it, because I would be a part of the, you know, the party taking care of things. You know, when she started talking to me about it, I was like, I'm sure like a lot of people was like, oh, do we really have to discuss this? You know, is this something that I really want to hear? I'm not a funeral person, you know. I'm the kind of person that, you know, I would much rather remember the person alive than, you know, you know, and it's, I don't know what it goes back to. But anyway, it's just one of those things that I'd much rather keep the person's live memory in my brain rather than the dead. But that's
and you're not alone. I mean, there's nothing in life, few things in life more sobering than a funeral. And I think what they do is they put us so in touch personally with our own mortality. And so many people feel the same way you do.
Yeah, good. I'm glad I'm not alone. But,
you're not.
But anyway, but, you know, and it was clear to me, though, that, you know, this was very important to her. But because of that, I took it very seriously and sat there and listened and just took in everything that she wanted from, you know, the place of the funeral to all of the, you know, the whole contact list is there, who to contact, you know, everything. You know, pallbearers, I mean, the ceremony, she's a very religious person, so she's got scripture, you know, that she wants read. I mean, so it's like she wants this orchestrated her way, which is, you know, when it comes to the time, that time, which I hope is going to last for a while, but when it does come to that time, it certainly is going to make things so much easier for me.
Very much so, and so appreciated and so powerful. Yeah. And actually, it takes some of the pain and angst out of it because you know that it was planned and orchestrated so meticulously, you know?
Right. Yeah, and that it's done the way that she wanted. There is, like, no question, you know, as to what she wanted or, you know, so if there was any, you know, in some families, sometimes there's a little bit of bickering, you know, mom wouldn't have wanted this, mom would have wanted that, you know? So it
or
kind
a lot
takes away.
Yes.
Now, and then section three, the final section is called Nothing Left Unsaid, Love, Live, and Celebrate. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. Section three, Love, Live, and Celebrate, is the opportunity for you to now share your life story and everything about you. And it's a beautiful opportunity. You know, they say it's actually extremely healthy and rewarding for people that are down to their final days and at the end of life to do what's called a life review. This is just a wonderful opportunity for each person to dig deep into their memory bank and share their life journey and the things that they learned from and the mistakes that they made and lessons that they would encourage others to be aware of and who they loved and why and what mattered to them. And it's extremely detailed. And again, it's simple because you fill in the blank. What also is in that section is important family health record, which is paramount today with advancing medical technology. It's so important that those whom came after us are aware of this because it can be valuable for families. And often it is the elders in a family that share that genealogical fingerprint of the family information. And so it's so important that the information be passed down. It's often lost in families, especially today in such a geographically displaced society. So that's important. Also, just family tree and family history. And you may find there's some notable folks that you want to share that the younger generations or grandchildren may never know if you don't share it in this book. And then my favorite, one of my three favorite parts of the entire book is the Dear Loved One letters, which I think are so touching and amazing, and everybody I would encourage to be doing Dear Loved One letters because we just don't know. And so the book isn't for somebody at the end of life. This book is for any adult of any age at any stage. And I just know that I have teenagers, so they think they're invincible. As we grow, I think that we recognize the importance of something like this. But the Dear Loved One letters allow you to put in written form and share something special and with people that you love. And, you know, I think about that. I would write a letter or have for my children. I think of my son, you know, looking at that envelope that I have stowed away that says, to my son, when you become a father. And I think about that if I'm not here, that he has that amazing gift from me, from the other side, that he gets to anticipate opening this envelope and reading my words and allowing me to still be part of that special day and be present, if you will, give him a present as well when I'm no longer personally here. Well, I hope that's not the case. The letters can help so much healing in the void that would be existing if they weren't in place. Gets eradicated. And so it's like, you know, thank you, Mom. Thank you so much because I was missing you. And it's the letters to loved ones can be written to grandchildren yet to be born. So that's important. And then it culminates with your checklist, both for yourself completing the book as well as your survivors. And at the end, we have a big celebration at the end of the book.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm sorry, those love letters are so important because, you know, a lot of times when you hear people who are terminally ill, you know, especially parents of young ones, you know, that is some of their deepest sorrow in the fact that they may most likely not be there for their children's special event, you know, and you know, that's such a gift to be able to give your child, you know, and then, you know, I believe, you know, that, you know, when that letter is read at that particular moment, that, you know, the spirit of the parent and the child are just going to be so connected that, you know, granted they're not there in person, but in spirit, you know, that's very, very important. That's very, very touching.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, think about it. We can't see air, but we breathe it, and we can't see love, but we know that we feel it. So we do have to wonder if we'd be lonely if we actually knew who was with us all the time. And the letters, when you write them, actually are as emotionally cleansing and healing to the composer as they are the recipient at a later time. This is a wonderful way to get some peace and get some comfort about what if, and even if you know that you have, you know, the upcoming impending destiny of parting ways. It's just something that is absolutely helpful in that journey and helps you gain peace.
Yeah, very much so. No, I read a book of a gentleman who was going to be on my show, but his name is Greg O'Brien, and he wrote a book called On Pluto, and he's an Alzheimer's, suffers from Alzheimer's. And before it was in full bloom, one of the things that he talked about in his book was, you know, the importance of constructing an exit strategy, you know, and that has always stayed with me, you know, the idea of making sure, you know, that our exit, you know, from this world is done in a way that we want it to, and that, you know, will also, you know, give support and love to those who are left behind.
Yes, and you bring me to think about, we talked about the bucket list, but there is the kick the bucket list that everybody's heard of the idiom, kick the bucket, intended meaning to die, but I put that in a different form. The kick the bucket list in the book in section one is about that. It is about righting your wrongs, and it is about, you know, where your bucket list is about living and dying is the deadline. Your kick the bucket list is about dying and living is the deadline, meaning you must get this done while you're living. And
right.
Why not? Because why be doing this sort of thing on your deathbed? Why not have peace for yourself and those that are in that situation with you? Why not evolve during a great state of living and forge that new alliance, that new relationship, and make it right? And so that's what the kick the bucket is about, and even self-forgiveness. There's a lot of people that maybe don't like their past. It's time to forgive yourself. Set the slate clean.
Yeah, very much so. And that does so much to make living lighter and much more, you know, fulfilling to be able to take care of that now and and, you know, enjoy it each day, you know, each day forward. Yeah, because a lot of times that, you know, when those things go unaddressed, it creates a weight on you, you know, and it just seems that, you know, this is a burden that we really don't need to carry.
No, it's enormous burden, and it's once you get rid of that emotional luggage, it is something that is offering you an incredible, enriching experience for peace and tranquility. And so I think that everybody should kind of look at their life and think about, okay, you know, am I going to be the bigger person here? Because, you know, death is a game changer. I mean, you can be mad about something, but if you change the perspective and you think, would I be mad if so-and-so was dying in an hour, in a week, a month? Death kind of changes perspective. Like, the little things that we think are big things aren't anything when you relate it to dying, you know? But we just shouldn't wait. We should actually recognize that some things, we make them something, but truly they may not be the gravity that they are when it comes push or shove.
Yeah. In the grander scheme of things, you know, is you know, what you said 20 years ago really that important? You know, I mean, you know, why am I hanging on to it? Well, now, did you have fun writing this book? I mean, you know, fun writing about death?
Well, I decided that if I wasn't having fun, my readers were not going to have fun. It was really important that I did make it fun and interesting, and that explains some of the quotes in there that are witty and silly. Earl Wilson's in there. If you think nobody cares if you're alive, try missing a couple of car payments. I mean, there's things in there that I try to keep people enjoying the journey, finding it enriching. There's things in there to really help you reflect. There's some poetry there that is deeply resonating, and it is to make you think, and it's there on purpose. And so I had a great time because this book is kind of a mashup of so many different things, and I was up for the challenge of figuring out how I could make planning for the end somehow enjoyable and inspiring new beginnings. This book is absolutely as much about planning for the end as it is about starting to renew living your best life now. So it's as much about living as it is dying.
You can sense that as you go through there, because as you're completing some of the exercises, you do get an appreciation for living. You know, it's like, okay, my beliefs about life, you know, gosh, am I really living what I believe? You know, that kind of thing. So I can see where, you know, that did the case. Now, granted, you made it fun so that others do it, could experience that as well. Now, what about challenges? Were there any challenges that you had when you were putting this together?
Yes. The fact that the book was about dying was a good one to start with. I knew that was a challenging topic to even try to write about, such a taboo topic, even today still. So I wanted to try to address that and make it something that we recognize happens to every living thing, and that it's going to be our time sometime too. So I really do address, you know, living and dying in the book, but in a very rational way that makes sense. The one-size-fits-all dilemma. This book, I wanted it to appeal from 18 to 118, and so there's something in there for everyone, and if a certain section doesn't apply, then they would just leave that blank. And so that is part of the format, and why it's got so many different things, is to appeal to a variety of audiences. And I think the biggest thing was that I wanted the book to become the reader's and for them to make it their own. That was so important to me. And so the book changed. It started one way as education, and I thought, oh, this isn't going to work.
Right.
Evolved, and until I thought it was fun, it wasn't going anywhere. And so I hope that, you know, it has the platform to certainly serve people in positive ways and to be enjoyable. And, you know, the feedback so far is that people are like, I don't know how I'm having fun planning to die, but I am.
Right, yeah. Well, you know, that I could see, you know, where that would be the case. But you're certainly shifting the, you know, the perception and the avoidance that a lot of people would experience when it comes to death. So that in itself, I mean, that's such a huge shift to be able to make for people. So that, you know, I love that. Now, is there any particular section that you would say is your favorite?
I like the section on funerals because I think it is so important that each person have their fingerprint all over their funeral. And I believe in, you know, a wonderful farewell. And I think that it is just something that should be planned by each individual person. I think of it as your last play, your last performance, and you're orchestrating it for those that are in attendance to enjoy what you have put together for them, and that is the essence of you. And nobody can do that better than each individual person, and the tools and the template is in the book to make that happen. I mean, some people may be thinking, like, there's no way I could do this. I can't. I'm not that creative or I don't have ideas. It's okay, because I believe that you get there, and it still is your unique funeral when you're done with the book. And so I love that section because it's something that you kind of get some inner joy of, because you are smiling on the inside. You're thinking, oh, this is going to blow their mind. Oh, wait till they hear that. It's kind of like this little secret that you have, and you're kind of laughing. And you're like, I don't know if I'm going to be here or not, because I don't know what happens when I die. But, boy, is this going to be funny when it happens, or is this going to be enjoyable, or is this going to be meaningful? And when you designated certain people to read certain poems or share a story, you've incorporated them. You've given them a job. You've chosen them to do something on this monumental day, the celebration of your life. And those things are important, that you do that and keep those folks engaged, in, especially on that day, that they have a job. And I encourage people to have a greeter, have somebody out in the parking lot. Who do you want reading poetry? Put your family to work that day so that they become part of it and they're in mobility mode and doing things rather than in total havoc and grief and bereavement. And it will be an entirely different experience for them, and they'll actually be able to celebrate your life instead of being devastated. Yeah. And I love the me, myself, and I section because it continues to give after you've departed to your loved ones. And, of course, which I said earlier, the letters to loved ones, I think, are hugely monumental. So those are my favorite three sections of the book.
Yeah. You know, we were talking about things that, you know, people may not know. I know this one woman who passed on, who actually, if she had done this, there would have been a branch on her family tree that nobody knew about. That would have been listed. So, you know, oh boy, you know, that, because, you know, come to find out after her death, there was a child that she had who no one knew about, but actually came to light afterwards. So I thought, boy, you know, that would really some kind of get.
Yes, and I talk about that in the book. I say, is there something in your life that, for layman's terms, may need some splaining? And be careful. Be careful how you do that. Like, maybe not to everybody, but to the person that matters. Right. Should this go in your letters to loved ones, or should just this go in the book where the whole family's reading it? I do talk about tempering it and making sure you are sharing this in the right form, and making sure also, more importantly, that you give as much information as possible, because they may be reading this when you're gone, and all you've done is unfolded a whole bunch of questions, and you're not here to answer them.
Right. Yeah.
So I think
true.
It's so important that you give all the information.
That is very important. So, I just wanted to kind of ask one more thing before we go, and that is, again, I mentioned in the introduction that you founded the Ladder Life Planning Institute. Exactly what is that, and if you wouldn't mind sharing, because I think you offer some wonderful services that people may want to take advantage of.
Oh, thank you. The Ladder Life Planning Institute is the ultimate guidance for life's inevitable destiny. And destiny is either aging or when you are certainly at the end of preparing for your final journey. And so it's both. It's for adults that want to age vivaciously, and I encourage them to do that. The services that I offer, obviously, are gerontology services. I do workshops on the book. If people don't want to do the Sunrises and Sunsets book alone, the workshops certainly cure all tendencies for procrastination, and they're pretty fun and lively because you have diverse people in there, and they're guaranteed to be a good time, so that's fun. But I, as a gerontologist, I help people prepare individually in these areas. I work with businesses that cater to an elder audience and make sure that they are communicating properly and that they are set up well for the older generation, the greatest generation. And, you know, they may have dim lights. They may have low seating sofas. They may scream at somebody that has a hearing aid and all things that, you know, I just work with them and do workshops in that way. One of the things I enjoy the most is through my company, Tributations, a salutation is how that term came to be. But I love crafting and writing personal eulogies and officiating funerals to really bring the essence of the individual that's passed. And so it's probably one of the most rewarding things I do in life is writing and officiating funerals for people to make that day an easier day for people at a time when they're feeling the very worst in life.
Yeah, wonderful services, very valuable. And well, Holly, thank you for sharing this wonderful. Now, again, people can get a discounted version of the book today, correct, on Amazon?
Yeah, and I don't know how long it'll run, but it started today.
Okay.
And so, it's at a great price today.
Check it out, folks. Well, thank you, Holly. I really appreciate, you know, your time. Again, this is a topic that a lot of people don't talk about, but I think your book does a wonderful job of being able to get people talking and get people prepared, you know, not only the people who will be passing on, but also for those who will remain. So it's a really great tool. So kudos to you for such a good job.
Oh, thank you so much. It's my honor, my pleasure, my privilege to have been your guest today, and I'm excited about your next work. I think that's wonderful, and I'm just honored that we got to celebrate the official copyright today together.
Thank you very much. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Holly Kelly, and we've been talking about her new book, called Sunrises and Sunsets, Final Affairs, Swords with Flair, Finesse, and Functuality. And again, you can find out more by visiting her website, which is www.sunrisesandsunsetsbook.com. And again, there is a direct link to that in the show page description. And so, everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me. And our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.